So here we are once again, super special bullshit edition podcast of Drunk on Comics. My name is Derek. I'm here with Tony, who has currently got stuff in his mouth. And
you've got stuff in your mouth. Yeah.
And Kevin, who is always good for a comment.
Yeah, yep.
Well, thank you, Derek. I'm stoked to be here today, man.
We've missed you here over the last
episodes. Yeah, sorry about that.
Stop having a life.
Well, I tell you, this summer has just been crazy. We're from Michigan, and you know, Michigan, we only have maybe about 4 or 5 months of excellent weather.
Although I disagree on the excellent this summer. It's been piss hot.
My balls have been a little bit sweatier than other summers.
I stepped on mine the other day because they were hanging so low.
My God, I knew you were short. I didn't know you were that short. No, the summer's gray. I'm stoked. Man, I'll tell you what, guys, I'm fucking pumped for the Olympics.
Oh, God. Yeah, I don't do the Olympics.
I'm fucking pumped for the Olympics, too. High five.
Yeah!
That was a shitty high five.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, see, now you guys can hear the high five
at home.
Yeah. And just for those of you, obviously, because you can't see it, it looked just as gay as it sounded. So.
Yeah, my mouth is a little open.
Yeah. Yeah, there were sparkles.
No, man, I'm stoked, though. Of course, it's unfortunate my girlfriend does not share my appreciation for the Olympics.
Yeah, well, neither do I, so.
All right, so I'll have my own podcast talking about the awesome events that I'm looking forward to, such like women's air rifle and women's field hockey and women's volleyball and other sports involving women.
I do like the women's volleyball. That's enjoyable. So, but anyway, so what these super special bullshit editions, this is our second one, and basically what it is, we don't really have anything really planned out to talk about like we do on our normal podcast. This is just kind of us sitting around bullshitting. So we talked about
different than our normal podcast. That's what we do then too.
Well, yeah, but the other ones, at least we have like comic books that, you know, prepared that we're planning on talking about. We might actually have some news and notes planned out that we're going to talk about. And I kind of threw around a couple ideas, and I wouldn't mind a little bit later getting into conventions and what we like about them and stuff like that. And I'm sure that we'll get into some stupid stories about Tony and his Green Lantern rings. And
how because you keep bringing up the stupid stories.
We might as well get into the.
It's even funnier now that we actually have an audience to talk to people about it.
Yeah, so this was...
No, it doesn't make it any funnier. Derek has driven this story into the ground.
Oh, it's because you drove it into the ground that night. We were drunk, and drunk on comics that evening, at Motor City Comic Con. Was this 3 years ago?
This is three years ago.
Kevin, Tony, and I were there, and this was when those Green Lantern rings first started appearing, the nicer quality ones.
Well, they were nice quality, but it was also when all the series really started to gain traction, like the Darkest Night and the Brightest Day. Thank you.
Yeah,
and all the different colored rings.
Yeah, and so Tony got a ring, and after a few libations, was going, "Hey, Derek, take my picture," putting his fist out, and "take my picture." Oh, wait, that one's not that good. I honestly had a couple dozen photos on my camera of Tony where he'd just go, "Derek, take my picture." So I think we will be posting a Derek, take my picture photo on the website so you can see Tony in his awesome ring.
It is pretty awesome.
Well, anytime you're wearing like a multitude of Green Lantern rings,
did you end up with 10 of those?
It'd be awesome.
Oh yeah, one for each hand. Like I'm the Mandarin of Green Lantern rings.
Nice. So, One thing, though, that did just pop into my head, more of a curiosity question, and like any of our other bullshit conversations, if it goes nowhere, I'm not worried. The whole geek is chic thing right now. I mean, with the nerds being the new cool again. Have you noticed, I mean, like, because we've always been nerds.
Yeah, well, okay, we'll just talk, like, in fashion. Like, okay, you go to a mass merchant, like, you got your Target, you got your Walmart. Can you imagine, like, just, gosh, just even 5 years ago, you walk in and you see on the shelf a Batman shirt, a Superman shirt.
For adults.
For adults, yeah. Derek, you're an authority on children's wear, so you're saying that it's always been around for the toddlers.
Well,
so.
You know, I mean, it's like, you always notice, like, at the convention, especially on Family Day, when the kids are coming in, they got their Spider-Man t-shirt, their Batman t-shirt, or Superman, or whatever it may be. But, you know, now that, in fact, I had to go in and buy a new shirt for a wedding here not too long ago, and I was walking through the mall, and I went into at least three different stores where I saw they had, you know, Marvel and DC stuff out there, both, you know.
Well, it's because, though, it's not just comic books anymore. It's mainstream pop culture.
It is.
And that's the big reason why that stuff's happening now. If it was still regulated to just the books and the guys going into the Android dungeon to go grab the comic books and stuff, it probably wouldn't be as mainstream. But because Hollywood has blown out of proportions and giving it to a wider audience, there's tons of people that have seen those movies that haven't ever picked up a comic book even.
Yeah, and with Disney's acquisition of Marvel, I mean, it's just probably going to be out there even more and more. Like Derek, you were showing me that they're talking about bringing more comic book the related material to ABC television.
Yeah, actually, Tony, I just saw this earlier, so I haven't even had a chance to tell you.
Is it something you're going to piss me off and
burn? Dude, you're going to go Hulk smash.
No, not on this one. ABC is in the works with Marvel right now, talking about pursuing a drama series that's set in the Avengers universe.
Oh, following Luke Cage's wife?
I don't know.
Oh, there's one that...
You mean Power Man Luke Cage?
Yeah. There was...
you mean as in Kevin's What If comic? What if Luke Cage was white? With the best tagline on there?
Yeah.
Luke Cage is a funky honky!
Yeah. If you haven't... on the site, there's a blog entry I put up regarding What If. Check it out if you haven't yet already.
But yes, no, there was a last fall. It was supposed to... Revolve, what's her name? Jessica, I believe that's his wife's name.
Jessica Cage, would it be?
No, it's a different last name. They're
Jessica Power?
She kept her last name to kind of, you know, go with the whole...
Not Jessica Drew, is it? Because that's Spider-Woman.
Oh, yeah, that is. Regardless of the name, my drunken self can't remember, there was supposed to be a series revolving around her... That would have some more, because she is more not a mainstream big entity, but yet she has lots of affiliations to the Avengers.
Okay.
Yeah, well, obviously that's not, so I'll just shut up on my tangent. You can tell me what you've read.
They didn't really say, like, and so, I mean, it kind of leaves it open to interpretation. They did say, though, that they're looking at doing another Hulk series, though. And, I don't know. I told Kevin I want that sad walking away music at the end credits if they do it, because otherwise I'll be pissed.
Yeah, Hulk pissed.
Yeah, Hulk sad. You know, in the old Sheldon episode.
I'm totally down with that. And you know, they got to realize that by doing something like that, they're not going to. Hopefully, it doesn't get killed right away, because they have to realize that it's not going to be a ratings bonanza. I mean, take a Smallville, for instance. That wasn't a ratings bonanza, but it went on for 10 seasons. Because, I mean, it did okay in the ratings, but...
is actually one thing I didn't even mention in our last podcast, was I hate Superman. I love Smallville, though.
Yeah.
It was an epic good story.
Yeah, see, and I'm kind of the same way. I mean, like, I caught a couple episodes, and I was like, you know what? This is actually decent, and I'm not a huge DC guy, but I really enjoyed Smallville, so.
Yeah, well, when did you guys start watching the show? Because I started watching the first season, and, you know, watching, like, Star Trek, DS9, Voyager, like, the first season kind of turned me off, just because nothing was developed, and nothing. It didn't draw me in.
I got into it. I think it was in when season four was airing.
Yeah.
And I'd seen a handful of episodes here and there, and went to Best Buy one day, and the seasons were on sale for whole season like $12 or something crazy like that. And I'm like, so I bought like season one and two, and then I ended up going back. But see, I didn't have the CW at the time, so I couldn't...
You mean the WB?
The WB with the frog.
The WB! See, I love that frog. Yeah, remember that frog when he was dancing and singing? when the network first premiered?
Yeah, with a little shuck and jive move there. Like, that wasn't a racist frog at all.
You got me thinking about those racist birds from Dumbo.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason, you just...
Heckle and Jekyll or whatever?
I know who you're talking about. Okay, there was a big, huge cackle of birds.
Yep.
A flock of birds or whatever. And perceived as the stereotype... African-American male back then, and it was bad, but people, children love the movie. Oh, Dumbo, pink elephants and all that awesome stuff. So
wow. And I just looked this up on Wiki, and I think did they really name it Jim Crow and his brothers?
Oh, wow.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, so, Smallville, like Star Trek, but Buffy was another one where it's just, I couldn't get into it because I just thought the stories were dumb. There were a lot of one-offs. They didn't really have, like, this nice epic story arc, even starting. They were just developing, and I turned off to all that stuff, But later on, I went back and started watching them, and I'm like, wow, this is actually good television.
Yeah. I started watching Smallville at season 10. Well, so I had the luck of pretty much every night for about a year watching an episode or two and pounding through them to where I finished them this past spring.
You borrowed all my seasons.
Yeah.
But see, what's funny is, like, I still haven't seen season 10.
Superman dies at the end.
Oh, that's awesome.
And you're...
Yeah, sorry, Tony, you can't ruin my day. I'm upset.
You guys ever see that YouTube footage of apparently there's a small group of friends getting together, and someone, I guess, recorded a guy who was watching the last bit of the last episode where he comes out with the Superman outfit on.
And, oh, spoiler!
Yeah, spoiler heavy podcast, folks. No, but he was flipping out.
I have seen that. Yeah,
you've seen that. Okay, yeah.
I'd seen it before, even knowing the ending, so I didn't know what the hell he was flipping out about. And then, I watched it. And I'm like, really? What the fuck was that guy flipping out about? Because who?
Yeah. Okay. See, now I'm gonna have to go watch season 10, and now I'm gonna have to go watch that thing on YouTube.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give it the times, Derek. Jeez.
Yeah.
But ABC has to realize that it's not going to be an instant ratings bonanza, and hopefully they can stick with it. Or if they don't feel like they're getting the advertising dollars for it, they can at least move it to one of their other channels, like ESPN.
Yeah, that pisses me off when Ocho.
I just hope that they make it into a musical. You know, like Hulk meets Glee kind of thing.
Set to the pop songs of today?
Actually, I think it would be more appropriate set to hair metal. I mean, because a lot of those hair metal songs were kind of angry. you know.
Yeah, they weren't preaching a whole lot of love in those.
No. No, I mean, it's like all about...
Hate.
Well, no, I don't mean death metal. I mean, like, you know, like...
Hey, he'd listen to some Death Clock.
Great, so... All right, let's move on from this one. I think we're already...
Oh, no, but let's go full circle. What we were talking about, where, yeah, it's... We're seeing more stuff readily available to us in the toy aisle, because it used to be like you
Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. That's a perfect example. Well, and the toy thing, let's kind of hop on that for a second. As somebody who had briefly been a toy collector, and Tony, you still are a collector, but you don't collect for the monetary reason, you collect for the quote-unquote coolness factor of it, you know, the playability of the toys, if you will. Is there any value left in collecting toys?
Boy.
I mean, current toys. You know, because vintage toys, I think, will always
have, but it depends kind of what and if it's in the box still. There are some toys that are from like 4 years ago that I know, Transformers, that are going for about 10, 20 bucks more than what they were. So they're going for about 40 when they're 20. Pisses me off because I wish I had the money then to buy them when they're 20. I'm still going to buy them when they're 40 because they're pretty sweet,
and
limited run kind of toys. There are others, though, that it's kind of like there's a bajillion different Wolverine action figures. Unless you got the one with the variant face, kind of like variant covers of comic books, it's not going to be worth anything. But if you're also buying a toy for trying to collect, you should do it to collect, to play with, to put it in display, not to collect to try to resell. I think any person that collects for just to resell is...
Well, it's silly, honestly. I mean, because unless you run a retail store or even an eBay store, your chances, I think, of making money at it are pretty slim. And you're talking to somebody. I mean, I collect comics pretty hardcore now. You know, especially in the last few years when I've gotten back into it. My chance of actually ever getting my money back on, I'd say, is slim. You know,
slim. And you're giving it a much more, much greater chance than I would ever hope to have.
Well, the only reason that I say
which
that
is null. Now these days, I'm, you know, whatever I buy, I have no expectations on any sort of redeeming value on it. Whereas, like, in the 90s, when there was that comic boom with all the crazy covers,
that got quite ridiculous, which I honestly think that's something that killed the market for a long time, you know, was that... You know, the basically Image coming out and having 8 million covers per issue.
Did Image do that? Because I know Marvel for sure. Marvel and DC did that a lot. Like I always remember like this solid red issue of Fantastic Four was like number like 334 or something like that.
Well,
this solid red cover. It was pretty sweet. But it was double the price than the normal version.
Well, that's what ticks me off sometimes is just the places doubling those price. However, I've also heard last year I was talking at one of the conventions to a shop owner of that, and as you were saying, the oversaturation and everything, a lot of those businesses then get stuck with some of these because the publishers won't accept them back as credit, and you have to buy so many of them to get those few variant covers, which people are looking for those variant covers, so they know those ones will sell, but then they have 20 of the regular covers, which no one even buys those books anyways. I think that the publishers did a disservice to the shop owners by making them pretty much hawk their wares to, you know, customers.
Yeah, well, now, speaking of that, there's one of the local shops that I go to. I was talking to the owner right before Walking Dead number 100 came out. And they had 1 in 100 and 1 in 200 variants. And so I do like the variant covers sometimes. I like having the option. I don't always buy them because...
Yeah, you showed me a few of them. I think those are pretty cool. I didn't really, you know, not until you actually told me what a variant was. I really had no idea because it was just... they're just called alternates.
Yeah.
Back when I was collecting.
Yeah, so.
God, you're old.
But he told me that there was a guy that actually came in and wanted to make sure that he got that 1 in 200 variant for Walking Dead number 100, that he was actually willing to buy 200 copies of the book. So that,
wait, who's this?
An individual collector was going to buy 200 comics, 200 issues of Walking Dead number 100 to guarantee that he would get the 1 in 200 variant.
Jesus, man. God damn.
I want his job.
I'm just thinking about how much booze I could buy from that.
So, $4 a book, 200 books, you know, do the math.
That's like $300.
Yeah, $300 or $400. Yeah, because it's $4 a book. So, but I mean, really, it's like, wow. You know, you're willing to drop, you know, with tax and all that, pushing a grand.
Yeah.
Just so that you can get one. If you want to make sure you get that bad, go on eBay. You know, but I don't know. So, it's variant covers do get a little crazy. You know, it does piss me off a little bit, but as a collector, when I look at the potential resale value of mine, it's the issues that I have those 1 in 50s and those 1 in 100s. Those are the most likely for me to be able to get any kind of money back out
of. True. That's where we differ greatly is, as you said, that you're looking towards the resale value. When I collect to read the stories, and if someday I, you know, pass these down to my grandkids or something, and all of a sudden, one of my random copies that I picked up, you know, Captain Marvel number one that just recently came out, somehow that becomes the go-to comic book. I'll be like, sweet, I have that somewhere. It's probably not in mint condition. Maybe I'll sell it, maybe I won't. But I think it's a pipe dream for anyone who really, truly thinks they're going to be making a lot of money on
their... Oh, absolutely. And that's, I mean, you know that I've always said my number one rule for collecting is buy what you love. Don't buy for resale value. What I do like about collecting is the thought that there's some value.
That is true too. I do have that pipe dream sometimes. Like, oh man, I'm going to pick up this number one.
Yeah, yeah. And I tell you what though, I mean, but honestly, I think when it comes down to collecting, if you really want to get something that's going to be valuable, the only way to do it is you've got to buy indie books. I don't believe that there's going to be another Marvel or DC book out there that 20 years from now will be a three-figure book. No,
you know, you're absolutely right with, like, Walking Dead, for example. I mean, I would imagine number one, number two has got to be worth a couple bucks these days.
Well, you know what? I'm kind of curious because I know, well, it's worth more than a couple bucks.
Yeah, I saw it when we were at the CherryCon.
300 plus.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
And that may not have even been a first print. I've got the new Overstreet, which just came out here within the last month. I'm just going to kind of actually look.
Yeah. You've got speaking me curious of, now. And we would love to hear from Overstreet. We always have sponsorship opportunities available on our website, drunkoncomics.com, where we are always adding new content.
Yeah, see, now this one here is saying that Walking Dead number one in a near mint minus is 250. I can tell you flat out that, and it's one of the things with Overstreet. I really like Overstreet, but I think that the newer the book, the less realistic of a price that they have, because one that they have in there this year, it's now listed at $10, is NYX number 3, first appearance of X-23. I've yet to see that book anywhere for less than $50 in a near mint minus condition. They have it at 10, you know, so.
Yeah, no, but that's just a straight up issue. Now, I forget what you were calling it.
Trade paperbacks?
No, where you get the comic graded.
And when you slab them.
Slab them.
Yeah, when you go to the CGC or whatever.
You just taught me that term today. When it's slabbed like that, does that automatically cause the book's value to increase?
Yes, and that's what pisses me off.
Isn't it sealed?
It's sealed, so okay. It becomes cover art. And we kind of talked about this a little bit yesterday. But it pisses me off because, yes, I understand for the the series collector that wants to be able to prove that it's such and such condition and that he's willing to pay that, yeah. But you know what? If you don't know what you're paying for, then it should be buyer beware. But any of those, like, older comic books that are out there, they always, like, whenever somebody finds a collection of something, they will go and automatically have them graded, and then they're sold at auction that way. Because then they can say it's exactly this. Now, I did talk to somebody from the CGC one time, and comics grading, whatever it is.
Council?
Could be. I don't know
what the Illuminati?
Yeah.
I hate those. I mean, like we talked about before, whoever it is that gets to grade them, who the hell gave them that power?
Yeah, I mean, it could be pretty subjective, and imagine a 9.6 versus a 9.2. I mean, that would impact the sellability of the product.
Absolutely. That's a 9.6 to a 9.8 is a huge difference.
Are they even showing up at conventions now?
Yes.
Because I knew they. I saw them at a few, and I'm like, who are these fucks?
Yeah.
Because not knowing what this was all about, because I was out of the realm for so many years.
Well, and for instance, when Tony and I were at a show here a couple years ago, and Stan Lee was there, there's two issues here that I want to talk about. One, people are going to get their comics graded, and then they're literally taking those comics and walking them over to the table that's set up there and submitting them to be graded and authenticated for the autograph. And so people are taking what I consider to be comic book history and just going, seal it forever. Nobody else ever gets to look at this ever again. You know, and yes, you can go and buy these comics digitally if you want to read them. But you know as well as I do that they don't look the same. And half the thing for me when it comes to reading old comics is that newsprint has that feel and it has that smell that you don't get with new comics.
Wait,
and
there's digital copies of comics?
Oh, yeah. Uh-oh. Super special secret. Go ahead, Tony, read it off.
MTML3QRU72PQ.
Yeah, that is a free digital copy code that has not been used for
Avengers number 28.
Number 28. First one gets it. There you go. So, and I didn't stop you from doing it.
You're not a dick like Matt. You just hurt my feelings with all your news of canceling my favorite people.
Cancel your people?
Yes. Yeah.
So, in the back of new comics, Kevin, because I know you don't really, well, you don't buy a lot of new Marvel stuff, at least. In the back of them, they have little coupons.
Yeah, I'm noticing that. I got here a collection of A versus X, and then right on the front it says purchase includes free digital copy offer
in the back,
which is an awesome idea. If you guys redeemed any of these?
No, we haven't.
I did. I redeemed one of my own, but we got into talking about it because, in theory, I was ever to have a comic graded. By peeling that sticker off, it is not in near mint condition anymore. Okay.
That's still near mint, and it's mint.
Well.
But, okay. So, but peeling this, then you're reducing the value of this book, then?
In theory, I would assume that.
Okay. That reminds me of something like, remember Spawn number 4? There was a coupon in there.
Oh, yeah.
And back when that comic actually had some value, whether that coupon was in there or not, it was like a $2 comic that didn't, but it was a $20 comic that did still have that coupon.
Yeah, it was the same thing with Gen 13, which there's another perfect example. After the 5-issue miniseries, Gen 13 came out, and issue number 1 had 13 covers.
Well, how about this, to answer that question? So, you are looking to buy, you know, one of these comics that you haven't had before, and they set the price at $10. Are you going to say, no, I only going to pay $9 because that sticker's off?
Oh, no, I'd only pay $5.
And it's graded for $10 or whatever.
If
you would seriously make them say, no, that sticker's off.
It's the same thing as if there was a large crease in the spine, or if there was, you know, enough foxing on the corners to where I would say no. If the pages were off-white or tan rather than white. All those things, when it comes to me, when I collect, you know, it's one of the things when I hand you guys my comics to look through, I get a little nervous. I get a little anxiety.
You get a little sweaty.
Yeah,
a little twitchy. Because
you know, and actually, so this, I'm coming full circle to where we started with the Stan Lee thing. One of the ladies that was there helping out was just grabbing people's books and just haphazardly, like, here's the book, you know, like, handed it just, you know, across the table. And everybody's sitting there going, what are you doing? Drove me nuts. But, yeah, so, I don't know. That's now, the other thing is, it's one of the very few problems I have with the Big Bang Theory is that Sheldon has, like, disposable gloves in his bedroom for reading the comics and all that, but yet whenever you see the guys sitting around, you know, talking about their comics, they're handling them like they're People magazines. Like, they're not careful. So,
well, the rest of the guys in that show, though, aren't as anal or attentive as Sheldon.
No, but Sheldon, you know, does the same thing.
Well, like, maybe he buys two copies.
Oh, it's very possible.
Do you think he reads any Marvel issues?
They do, actually.
Read really? Because yeah. I've only heard Marvel brought up every, like only a handful of times. Like, they were doing, like, this cost, they went to this costume thing, and Arthur Cuthbert-Kahle, thank you. He dressed up as Thor.
Yep.
And that was, like, the only Marvel reference I've ever really heard about on that
they
show.
They had an episode where Stan Lee came to the comic book store, but I also remember one where they were talking about Wolverine's proctologist.
Bone Claws. I remember that. So when Stan Lee was on the episode, did he just do, like, a quick cameo like he does in the movies?
It was a little bit longer.
Oh, okay.
But it was at the very tail end of the episode. So let's talk conventions for a few minutes before we get too far out of whack. Oh, is that a Big Bang Theory with Penny, or what the hell is that? Sorry, this is the bullshit edition when we...
I don't know, I'm just seeing this adult movie superstars right here with big black bars over some titties.
Nice.
And,
So let's talk conventions, because we said we were at least going to try to do that. Tony, when you go to a convention, what is it you're going for? I mean, what's your primary reason? Now, these upcoming conventions are going to be a little different for us because we're going to be promoting the show. But when you're not going to be promoting the show, what are you after? I mean, do you have plans of attack?
Booth babes?
Yeah. Try and smell their hair?
Yes. Try to. No. honestly, for reals, what I first do is look at the toy sections. I also look in the bargain bins to see some old collections. And all around, I try to get the whole layout of the place, go down and find out what has the most of the things I'm looking for. And then, because if you just go to your first booth, and then you just go to the booth right next to it, you're going to miss all those other booths that probably you should have hit first. So always doing a quick rundown of the place, and then saying, okay, I saw that one here. Try to plan your attack so you can hit them in a strategic way. That's kind of my plan of attack.
So, toys first, then comics?
It depends. I mean, honestly, they go hand in hand, but usually you can look through the toy sections of any of these things in about 5 minutes per booth, where if you're going to be flipping through the comics, you're going to probably be spending about 20 minutes. So, would you rather have quick did the 5 minutes to get the first part out of the way, or spent 20 minutes and then you go and realize that one toy that was up there is gone?
Yeah. Kevin, what's your normal plan of attack when you get there?
I'm going to go run and get my comics slabbed.
Asshole. Way to ruin the market.
Yeah.
I seriously think slabbing comics.
How much does it cost to do that? I mean, the whole idea just blows my mind of why the fuck you want to spend your money to do that.
Because you're going to resell
it. I mean, props to them because finding a new market within a market. But
I can understand, I understand why comic book shops actually sell slab comics because it's just another way for them to make money, and they're retail.
And they need to do that. Well, anyway, one of the first things I do is, you know, you just do the quick up and down, you know, to see if anything out of the corner of your eye catches you right away. Because they don't have truckloads of inventory in most cases of cool stuff hanging around. So really the first thing that I look for, honest to God, is I look for games.
That's right. You always find some good games there too.
I'm definitely
X-Men Alert was probably one of my favorite finds that you ever had because I love that game.
Dude, X-Men Alert is single-handedly my all-time best, if my most favorite board game, and it's even better now that my girlfriend actually has taken all 16 figures and hand painted them.
What?
Yeah, she got like a plethora of paints and specialty brushes, one of those magnifying lighted lenses, and here she is fucking, you know, holding on to these figures and making Storm and Rogue look like trannies and. aside from that, you can't really do much to make them not look like trannies. That game right there is awesome. But no, I found some really cool gems. Some old games that I played when I was a kid, I find right there. And you know what? And it's actually always cool to talk to the shopkeepers about that stuff because they're like, "Whoa, like we just blew the dust off of this and didn't think anyone was going to buy it."
Yeah. Yeah, you can get some awesome deals on
so,
those.
Yeah, so yeah, but that it really that
so and, games and then CGC and, get your book
yeah,
slabbed.
Yeah, and trade paperbacks. Man.
See, I think you should get your games slabbed so that you can never open them and play with them again. But you can tell somebody what's inside is perfect because that makes as much sense to me as a freaking slab in a comic. Now, I just did hop online real quick and look. The CGC, which stands for the Certified Guarantee Company, based on what they have, anywhere from $12 per book up to $95 per book is what you...
$95, what is it, based upon year or what kind of mood they're in? Or
max value of the book and how fast you need the turnaround. And then there's a $5 handling fee. As well.
Well, I'd like to let our listeners know I'm proud to announce our company, the DGC, the Drunk Guaranteed Company, where you bring in your shittiest comic books.
And we'll guarantee to get drunk while we read it.
No. We will grade it for you and let you know how shitty that is, whether it's a PBR or a Molson. We will let you know through our grading.
Molson's not bad.
Well, that's a better...
Molson Ice?
Oh, yeah, that's kind of shitty. Yeah. But yeah.
Is it Bud like platinum worthy?
I haven't had the platinum.
Oh, yet. You treat yourself to a Bud Light Platinum. Oh,
okay.
And then treat yourself to a roll of toilet paper.
But Tony, I like your idea.
Seriously, bring your comic books to us. You hear us, if you hear us being at a show, bring the shittiest comic book you got. We will grade it for
you. Or better yet, if you're an indie artist and writer and you just got that book out there, bring that book. We'll grade it. You know, who knows? You may have, you may have a Budweiser, or you might have
a Schlitz.
A Schlitz. You might have a Newcastle. You know,
ooh, a nice Imperial Stout.
Yeah,
you Colt 45.
It works every time. But yeah, I mean, you might have some Chimay, who knows? But yeah, bring it in. We'll definitely give it a good grade.
See, now I'm thinking about some Framboise. Sounds delicious.
I'm completely lost. What the hell? Oh, conventions, full circle. So, yeah, my typical thing when I go into conventions is a little bit different than both of yours, because when I go, I'm typically toting in a number of comic books that I want to get signed, and I'm typically looking to get at least one commission done. So what I do, the first thing I do, very first day, go in, and if I know I'm going to get a commission, I go over, find that artist, talk to him about it, and then get myself on the list for commissions.
All right, so explain to me exactly the commission. I'll give you my take on what exactly it is. Because, I mean, I hear you guys talk about commissions. My friends say, I got this awesome thing done. So do you just go in to you find an artist that you enjoy,
or that you can afford, whichever one it is.
Because I'll get to that in a moment. But so you just talk with them, and you're like, okay, do you just ask them, like, are you for hire? Or
normally, what they'll do is most artists will have a sign out on their table, you know, that says, you know, commissioned pieces, and okay. they'll have their quote unquote menu or their price list up there of what.
Oh, okay. So do you go in with an idea, or does he have a list of this is what I'm good at and this is what I'll draw for you?
They will draw anything as long as you're paying them. They're kind of whores, which is awesome.
Okay,
you know, but and every artist is a little bit different. And I've talked to a few. Some of them, like for instance, Ryan Stegman gets asked to do a lot of Scarlet Spiders because that was the book that he was working on, and okay. he made that character very, very popular.
Sure.
Tony got a sketch card from Jim Starlin and had him draw Thanos, which is the character that he created. So a lot of people, if they're famous for a certain character, will end up drawing a lot of that certain character. What a lot of people I've found, they enjoy drawing things that they've never really had the chance to draw before, or very limited. I saw one guy, I don't remember who the artist was, but he was talking that he was just doing, you know, like $40 sketches, which were pretty basic, but somebody came up and said, I want you to draw Godzilla. And so he said that he only charged him, like, you know, the $40, but what he created for him was probably a $200 piece because he had so much fun. You know, like, he did full colors and backgrounds and everything, where normally it's just the character. Now, everybody's a little different. My last commission I did, or I got, was from Ryan Stegman, and I wanted him to draw Daredevil and Typhoid Mary. Now, this is a little tip for anybody. If you're having an artist draw somebody who is not a super popular character, a very, very well-known character, you should always take reference material. You know, because if you don't...
Sure. Like, if I wanted to have him draw...
MODOK.
I'm thinking, like, you remember Slapstick?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're like, hey, Slapstick. You know,
I don't remember Slapstick, but...
Yeah, you know, he had a four-issue miniseries back in the 90s. And apparently he actually, I saw him in a recent issue of something.
It sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
And if you saw it, you would know what you're saying. But just that example, though, artists may remember.
He looked at you if you don't remember. Go, sure.
Well, and the perfect example, now, I took reference material of Typhoid Mary with me, and I knew that Ryan wasn't going to be able to get to that sketch that day, which I was fine with because we were there all weekend. So I went over and talked to him on Sunday. He goes, I don't know. He goes, which version of Typhoid Mary do you want? And he pulled up, the great thing with smartphones and tablets is that you can find a lot of that stuff on there. And he showed me three different versions of Typhoid Mary. I'd never seen any one of those versions. I only knew the one from the 80s that I was familiar with. And I'm like, oh, okay, no, let me run out to my truck and I'm going to grab for you. So it worked out great. But when you're getting a commission, the more you talk to the artist, if you have specific requests that you want, I mean, if you go up and say, I want Thanos, and he draws you a picture of Thanos standing there, you know, with the Infinity Gauntlet, and you're like, no, I wanted him holding a pimp cup. Well, you got to explain that kind of stuff to the artist.
So you ever talk to an artist who, you know, okay, you did a commission and then had an issue where someone's like, this sucks, I want my money back, or I'm not paying, or whatever?
I'm sure it's happened. I've never had anybody tell me about it.
I could see that something like that happen. That might deter someone from returning back to that particular convention, because as an artist, who wants to deal with that kind of shit? Like, the only kind of criticism I'm sure they want to have is from someone who's actually giving them a paycheck.
Yeah. Well, and now, like, all the artists that I've commissioned before, you pay them up front, you know.
And, oh, sure, so they're not wasting their time.
Right. Yeah. You know, so you do that. But, you know, I mean, prices vary whether you want just you know, a head sketch if you want, a bust if you want, full body if you want, more than one character if you want, colors, whatever it may be. All these different things for different artists could vary in there. So, but so when I go full circle conventions, I first go and I get my commissions scheduled if I'm going to get commissions from an artist there.
Sure, sure, yeah.
After that, then, I am on the hunt to get all of the books signed that I brought to get signed. Because that's one of my big things. And honestly, it's another question for debate as to whether or not having a book signed, if that devalues your book or not as well. Because unless you have verification, you know, I'm sure there's tons of forgeries out there, you know, or people could figure out how to forge autographs on there and say, oh, look, Stan Lee signed this.
Really? Do you think there's a lot of those out there? I would have never even thought about forgeries.
I think there's probably more out there than well, obviously there's more out there than what you think there,
God, thought there would be. I mean, yeah, I guess.
But that's still thinking that a single comic book is gold already, and you have that signature and you're making it platinum. I don't think it matters to the person that's going to buy it. And ultimately, that's what comes down to. Mm-hmm. The person's going to pay whatever they're going to pay, whether it's signed or not. So you may find that buyer that will pay a little bit more for that signature. I don't honestly think that it devalues it, but there may be someone that's like, I don't really want that signed.
Actually, I've had both things happen. You know, because I did have multiple copies of some books that, you know, I'd gotten signed or I'd purchased and found a signature on the inside and this and that. And one of the issues, which was a fairly decent issue, actually was the NYX number 3. I had had Joe Quesada sign it a few weeks prior at C2E2, and nobody wanted it because it was signed. But yet I had a Daredevil, and I don't remember what issue number it was now off the top of my head, that Frank Miller had signed on the inside cover back in the 80s, and it was a $10 to $20 book that I ended up getting $80 for, strictly because Frank Miller doesn't sign like what he used to. So,
and you just got rid of an awesome piece of history.
Yeah, but you know what? It's fine. I had two copies of the book, and in that case, see, when I get something that's autographed and I didn't personally get it autographed, it doesn't mean as much to me.
Yeah, I guess that's true too.
And again, this all goes back to the fact that I enjoy collecting as much as I enjoy reading the stories. So, you know, so after I do my commissions, I do my my autographs, then I just start diving back issues. You know, I've really knocked off a huge chunk of my wish list.
Mm-hmm.
As far as key issues. I still have them, but now these are the key issues that I'm going to be spending hundreds of dollars on each individual book, and I'm just not at that point where I want to spend that kind of money. So I enjoy digging through the old, you know, dollar bins, $2 bins, 50-cent bins, whatever I can find to fill in blanks. So that's pretty much it on conventions for me. But so Tony,
you
look a little rough for the wear here.
I was definitely out at the beach earlier today, enjoying this weather,
quaffing a few brews.
That
did you take your comic books out there with you?
No, but I did buy a new Kindle Fire and found that there are plenty of ways to read comics on the go without having to ruin the pages, so I've been actually downloading a couple digital copies onto those.
Yeah. Now, did you have any issues of viewing it, because I know, you get the wrong
type. Like a glare?
You get any sort of glare, you can't see shit on it.
It is a little bit rough straight up in the sun. But I was in shade anyways, so.
See, and I have read a few books digitally. I use the Comixology app. I've only purchased one book. Just one. And it was it's my favorite Uncanny issue of all time, which is 213. And I bought that. But I've downloaded a lot of free comics off of there. And the free comics, I gotta admit, some of them have gotten me into buying other books. I mean, you and I were talking about Walking Dead the other day, that I'd always wanted to get into it, But, you know, I was kind of felt, I'm like, well, it's too far behind. It's too far mm-hmm. behind. And I downloaded the first issue because it had been free, at least for a time, on Comixology and read it. I'm like, it's pretty cool. That's kind of what led me in. And also with the upcoming, you know, what was upcoming issue number 100, you know, I wanted to find out what was going on there because I'm like, you know, if I'm going to start buying single issues, I better get caught up. So a matter of a month, I purchased and read all 16 trade paperbacks. Lent them to Tony as I got through with them, and in a matter of 2 weeks, he read all 16 of them as well and managed to pick up the last four issues or three issues before issue 100. Got caught up on that. That is a ridiculous series. So,
yeah, we'll definitely hit that topic on another day because I would like to specifically talk about Walking Dead.
Yeah, which it's weird because it seems that there is some sort of unspoken rule in the nerd world that you aren't supposed to talk about what happens in The Walking Dead so that other people can get caught up. But all other comic books are fair game.
I've never heard this rule.
I've heard it on a couple different podcasts, seen it on a couple different websites.
Well, I may get drunk and forget that rule, so...
Yeah, we're spoiler heavy here, but and I'm fine with that. I mean, I still want to. I still need to see some of the television series.
Oh, see, I've only seen the first episode.
Oh, yeah, and you know the comic, and you know, I actually want to get up to snuff a little bit first because I know because there's a lot of you know a lot of cues that come from the book.
Mm-hmm. Rick dies.
Sad face.
Yeah. Actually, just everyone dies.
They're all just zombies now. They are Walking Dead.
That would be great.
That's all the books are now is just them just drawing zombies walking aimlessly into the ship.
And like, oh, I remember that character. Oh, that's sad. So, well, I think we've sufficiently bullshitted for about nothing for the last almost hour.
Yeah, another successful podcast is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Another good reason for us to get together and drink a little bit.
Yeah, I'm always a fan of that.
Hell yeah, man.
Well, here's our basic breakdown at the end that we always do. Find us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. Obviously, you can find us on our website, drunkoncomics.com. Would like to give a shout-out to... any artists that are out there in particular. We are really trying to promote the Artist Alley section of our website, so if you'd like to be added, we'd love to have you on there. Get in touch with us. It's free. You know, it's just extra promotion for you. And if there's anything you want to hear, you want us to talk about, actually got, you know, our last podcast, the Indie Turnpike, with the little segment about the Illuminati. That all came through conversations on Twitter. I wouldn't have known about them otherwise. So, you know, get in touch with us and love to help promote your book or what you do or even what you love if it's not something that you do.
Well, with that, I'm set. I think you guys are set. Say goodbye, Derek.
I don't want to say goodbye.
Say goodbye, Kevin.
Okay.
I'm Tony with Drunk on Comics, and I guess we will check you guys later.
Peace.